Drunk on Comics, episode 168, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. She knows nothing.
Oh.
Names from last week, especially after naming the episode, I started thinking back of before we even started this podcast, back when G4 was the like nerd channel and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I may have told you this before, Derek, but if not, I always had an idea for a show, and I kept on having these reoccurring daydreams of where we got famous of doing, like, it's called Secret Stash,
which is the name of Kevin Smith's comic shop in New Jersey.
Yes, but it doesn't matter because we were going to have a fucking awesome show where we were just going to do Easter eggs of, like, video games and comic books and movies, and it was just going to be all about those secrets. And then, well, we were lazy, didn't ever get around to it, but that was kind of what I wanted to do.
Maybe we didn't get around to it because you didn't tell me about this.
Could be. But then I kept imagining that we were doing this on YouTube for a little bit, and then, like, G4 goes, "Those guys are awesome. Let's have them come and join our crew." And then we got to go to Comic-Con and do interviews and be giant nerd guys.
And then I could talk Olivia Munn out of ruining my childhood.
Aww. And I could talk her into
ruining hers with you.
Is that who you cleaned your house for?
Yes, that is. So
I'm guessing this is Drunk on Comics.
This is Drunk on Comics now, no longer Secret Stash.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. For the brief moment that it was in my head.
In your dreams. Yeah.
And for new listeners, I'm Derek.
And I'm Tony.
Linz.
And yeah, that's it. Small group this week compared to the last full round.
Right.
We've had for a while.
Those other bitches have stuff to do, I guess. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and Tony apparently is going to have stuff to do the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so I'll be gone.
Yeah, thank Jesus. But, all right, well, should we get things started, or was there more bullshit we needed to cover before we actually get into the comic reviews?
I mean, I was just going to get into more of what the show was going to be about, man. I mean, it was going to have different segments, and it was going to be, like, so cool.
Let's start reviews.
And
you know, yeah. Speaking of things that have different segments, let's kick it off with our first segment, Off the Shelf.
Oh, and that puppy face.
That's mostly because his tongue's hanging out and he's drooly.
It's just me hungover.
All right, Linz.
I'm going to start?
I think we're going to make you start it.
Oh, I started last week.
Okay, never mind. Tony.
I don't have anything ready.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just saying this. I'm just looking up. I don't know if you guys noticed, like, I got a new message board in the studio.
Yeah, that's great.
It says that it's the studio now.
Yeah.
It's official.
And that will probably not change or do anything else besides be hanging on my wall, but
yeah. All right. Well, since Tony's lame, I can totally start, and it looks like you've got a lot going on over there.
I do, but you know what?
Probably let you go last.
But fuck it. I'll kick this off then. Yeah. Right. Since I'm getting kicked back. all right. Head Lopper, number 1 of 4 from Image Comics. This is a quarterly adventure comic, and it's written and drawn by Andrew McLean. He also did colors on part 3 of this story. There are 3 different parts in here. And then Mike Spicer did colors on part 1 and 2. And there were 2 covers, the Andrew McLean cover, which I got, and then the Raphael Grampa cover, which Tony got.
I love Raphael Grampa.
You know, I was going back and forth between the two as to which one I wanted. And I based it solely on the fact that I kind of liked the look of the witch on the front of this one.
That's my favorite character in this, too.
Yeah, this is Linz, I don't see this hiding in your stack.
No, I didn't get this one.
So here, I'm just going to hand this to you because I want you to look. This is the chunkiest, monkiest I've ever had.
It's a big boy.
Especially for price point of $5.99.
Yeah, it's, I'm guessing, 60-ish pages.
Yeah. at least. I'm I mean, that's where when I was reading it, I first off I was like, that look stick in the, you know, package, because where we go get comic books are already sealed and everything. But when I pull it out, I go, holy fuck, that's bigger than I thought. Like, that's going to take a while.
That's something nobody's ever said to Tony before.
Sad puppy face.
Aw, sorry, Tony. I'm not sorry.
All right. So, so this... Liz can't contain herself.
Oh, I made myself laugh really hard.
Okay, so this book follows around a guy who is a son of a minotaur, and he is, everybody calls him the Headlopper, and he's like, just call me Norgal, which is his name.
Norgal,
N-O-R-G-A-L.
All right.
But everybody calls him Headlopper.
That's better. That's more badass.
Yeah.
Well, I like how even in the first couple of pages, though, you kind of get who he is and what he does from the Battle of the Sea Monster. He is a man of strength and sword play and chops off heads. And there's not a lot of dialogue at first, but I like the use of the noises or sound effects.
Yeah.
That a lot of it. So there's a lot of like just pages that don't have much of anything going on except for the art, which
just action, action, yeah, action. And this kind of has an art style similar to almost like what you would see in an animated cartoon.
I was thinking that, I kept thinking of what is this? It started thinking a little bit of Adventure Time-ish, but not as cartoony as Adventure Time, but more or less, because the biggest difference is the head to body ratio.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, well, it's that, and nobody has noodle arms and legs like Adventure Time, which is why I can't read Adventure Time, because it creeps me out. But, yeah, this book, there's so much, it's kind of mythology and, you know, swords and sorcery type stuff, which is a blast to read. There's a character in here, which this is going to be a spoiler, but anybody that's listened to our show by now knows that there's going to be some spoilers at some point. When he picks up his bag and you hear someone talking from his bag that he's carrying over his back after his big fight, you find out that in the bag is the head of Agatha, the Blue Witch. And he cut her head off, but the bitch won't die.
and he even says just the reason why he's carrying around is because he's afraid of leaving her head somewhere that she'll then curse or like some, you know, forest creature or person.
Or just a poor guy walking by, she'll throw a curse. So, like, she's become, like, his, you know, kind of his burden that he has to carry around all the time. And she is a hilarious character because she's just like, ooh, that was so special when they talked like that about you. Are you big and strong?
Or when he'll throw the head at someone and she just goes, boo.
Yeah. Or when he's just like, all right, if I can't listen to you anymore, he'll just drop her head in a bucket of water because she's not going to die. Right. It's just that shuts her off.
That's funny.
But this is just a really, really cool book.
My favorite page was the splash page of fighting these giant wolves.
The wolves of Bara?
Yeah, and he kills three of them just with one going under, gutting it, then the other one chopping off its head, and then I'll throw my sword like a spear. And just like so many different, simple to follow, you know, the flow right here of seeing, okay, this guy pretty much kicks ass.
Yeah, it's just an all-around fun adventure. I would say it's for a slightly more mature audience, only because of the graphic violence. But it's in such a cartoony way that it's not really
right
graphic. You know, even when the one, there's a spot in here when a guy gets like bitten in half. I think it's actually right at the beginning. You know, when the Headlopper's going, throw me the sword, the guy decides that he's going to be brave, and the monster cuts him in half, and even his little intestines are just squiggling out from his, you know, from his body. Even that's not like, they're like, oh, okay, whatever. That's kind of cute.
Unrealistic.
Yeah, it's just, but this is just a really solid, fun book. I think really good character development in here. And it's kind of fun because, you know, in this book, was it in the end where I read it, or was it at the beginning? I read something about this about quarterly. Where the hell was it?
Oh, it's on the front. Wasn't it on the front, too, it says?
Oh, it does.
Right on the very front.
Yeah, well, no, but I read something in here about why it was... Oh, there it is. Very, very last inside page. Where, you know, Andrew McLean is talking about why it's quarterly, and basically he said, I wanted to do this quarterly because I can't do this in single issues. Stuff's going to get left out. It's going to get cut off. It's not going to make sense. There's too much of wide sweeping story arcs in here. So, yeah, so he's doing it quarterly. But, yeah, he even talks about how, like, he can do this better in 50 or 60 pages than he could, you know, in a couple 20-page comic books. Just great book all around. I had a lot of fun with this one. And I'll be honest, I didn't hear anything about it. I didn't know what it was going to be like.
I didn't hear anything either. I just looked at the cover and I said, saw this giant, you know, dude in my cover, you know, he's holding the little doll head instead of Agatha's head. But I'm like, this guy looks pretty menacing, and it's called the Headlopper. So I wonder what the book's about.
Yeah.
It's well, super metal.
Yeah, this is definitely like a heavy metal style.
Yeah, that's story. What I was thinking when I saw the cover.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of fun. I really liked this one. One thing too, that this is kind of a side note, is that Andrew McLean also has an original graphic novel advertised in the back called Apocalyptic Girl. And it's an aria for the end times. And so I'm really curious to check this out. What I found more interesting about this, which made me just kind of gave me a little warm fuzzies on the inside, is that the advertisement inside an image book for this is for a Dark Horse book.
Oh.
And I don't know that I've ever seen that before. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I probably have at some point, but I just haven't noticed.
That's cool.
So I just thought it was really cool. But yeah, everybody needs to go check this book out. It's just fucking cool. So that's it.
Right on.
All right, Linz.
I'll go. So this week I read Tyson Hesse's Diesel, number one, which is an all-ages book. It's from Boombox, which is their all-ages brand. So it's about this girl whose name is Dee Diesel.
Okay, wait, hold on one second, because I'm just... Because Boom has Kaboom, and then they also have Boombox.
Yeah.
Boombox is kind of more of that, like, tween age. Am I right?
I think
with
so,
that?
Yeah. Because they put out, like, I just read something else by them called Giant Days, which was probably more of, like, along the Scott Pilgrim type
so
age
more,
group.
More of a true all ages rather than, like, Kaboom, which is typically more kids stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
It's written by Tyson Hesse. And he did the illustrations, too. And then he got coloring assistance from Mariel Cartwright. But it's about this girl. She lives on a mobile community. It's like an aerial garage. So it's this ship.
See, I hear mobile community.
I know, right?
And I'm thinking of something that's going to get hit by a tornado.
Well, they're up in the air, so the odds of them getting hit by a tornado are probably pretty high. But
because they're but, up there,
right?
Hi,
okay. Yeah,
hi, Tony.
Anyway, it's what it is.
Hanging fruit.
What?
Nothing.
That.
What'd you say?
He said he has low hanging fruit.
Oh. No, he doesn't. Didn't we cover that already?
So what it is it's like a garage that floats around and fix other aerial ships. And it's been in her family forever, and it's called Peacetown. So it's like literally like a little community. So everybody that works on this, there's a restaurant on it. There's quarters for them to live in, stuff like that. She's the only one in her family left on the ship. Everybody else has left. It doesn't say why. I don't know if they'll get into that at all. But everybody else in her family has left. I think her father died, and everybody else was like, I'm out. And she stayed. Because when she turns 18, then she gets the rights back to the ship, so she gets to own it again. It'll be in her family again. And she is kind of one of those obnoxious. She's 17. She's one of those obnoxious teenager types who thinks that she knows everything, but she's really just super annoying to everybody else around her. Don't look at me like that.
I see how you relate to the character.
I'm like,
yeah. So she, you know, it starts off with her hassling the captain, telling her that, you know, in a day I'm going to be 18 and I'll have ownership rights of this place again, and then I'll be the captain, and what are you going to do? And the first half of it is just setting up the relationships between Dee and everybody else on the ship. And then halfway through, it gets to this point where these explosions start happening in the sky. They don't know why. They're trying to avoid them. Their ship gets damaged, and all this debris starts flying into their ship. And long story short, this engine drops into the garage, and everybody's standing around looking at it like, what the fuck? Dee touches it, and it comes to life. So moving forward, I'm guessing this is going to have like a, she's like, what do they call it? A technopath? Is that what they call people who can control machines?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. My guess is she's going to have some sort of ability like this. I really liked this book because it made me think, like when I was reading it, I was like, this could totally be like a Miyazaki film. It reminded me a little bit of Howl's Moving Castle.
Okay.
That sort of vibe. Or like a Jim Henson type book, because it's got all these cute little creatures in it, and it's got your spunky main character, and you can just see where they could take it in that direction. And the art on it is in the same lines as that too, where it's got that really round, like all their eyes are really round, mm-hmm. sort of like borderline anime style. But it was fun, and I haven't read an all ages book that I've liked in a really long time, just because I think they pander a lot to the lowest common denominator.
What, like, are you saying there's like too many fart jokes?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like us.
Whatever.
But this one was more, it's, you know, it's, I don't really know how else to.
You're struggling. There,
I know. Like, I know.
Drink some more and then we'll come back.
It's smart without being like.
Smart?
Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, it's not over, like, you don't have to look up words to find out what they mean. It's not reaching too far and trying.
So it's not, it really isn't smart. It's just as smart as you.
Right.
Okay.
She's pretty smart, I think.
Well.
You would think.
Yeah. That's but, as much as you know.
Yeah. So. It's really cute. It's only 4 issues, so I think that the story's probably going to move
they
pretty
can count
fast.
Count to 5 in this book.
No, they can't.
But it's all going to 4. That's right. Anyway, that's it. You guys should should check it out. I think it's a cute little story.
Lindsay, I know you said who did it, but can you remind me one more time?
Tyson Hesse.
Okay.
He did the story and the illustrations in it.
Cool.
So.
All right, I picked up the first of many informational pieces for the new Star Wars movie. And I say that because Marvel has now been putting out other Star Wars books, you know, kind of going some of the main characters that we all know and love from the movies. But this is the first of many different mediums that they're going to do to kind of bridge in the gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. Now, this is Star Wars, Journey to the Force Awakens, Shattered Empire number 1. And it's written by Greg Rucka, art by Marco Cicchetto. It starts off, like I said, I thought it was bridging the gap, but it starts off right where the first page shows Luke and Darth just kind of having their lightsaber battle, famously, at the end of Return of the Jedi. And then you start seeing the dogfight out there. But you're following just the amazing art of these ships just flying through space with the word balloons of many different people kind of chattering. Like, almost it brought me back to watching it when, you know, Alpha Bravo this or whatever, let's go on this one. X-Wings, let's fly over here. You know, and you just have all that those people talking through their comms. And that's kind of how it took me out of it a bit, but it brought me into the hecticness that was going on in this last dogfight when the Death Star was being destroyed. So at this point, I'm reading this thing. Where's this bridge in the gap? How is this going? Well, that's only the first couple pages. But you get introduced to one of one of the many pilots in here, Shara Bay, who I'll get to her in a bit of why she's so important to the whole new Star Wars movie. But you then get them down celebrating with the Ewoks, which we all know at the end of Return of the Jedi, like, yay! And then you see the remastered edition when they have the fireworks, and then there's a picture that just almost makes me feel like, yeah, they just threw that in there just because of how cheesy the fireworks scenes were. Like, Lucas did not need to fuck up those movies by adding all those extra celebrations. But anyway, Shara's there. She's looking for someone, and she finally, you know, you're wondering, okay, who's this person keep looking for? Probably one of the other pilots. Because in this battle, they were talking about losing some people. And they're, you know, whatever, they're red shirts, but still, it doesn't matter who they are. She's trying to find the person that she is. And she finally finds him. It's Sergeant Kez Damarian. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because in the preview trailers and the names that they've released for the new Star Wars movie, there's a specific X-Wing fighter, Poe Dameron, that pilots the black and orange, sweet-looking X-Wing in the new movie. So speculation is these two are his parents. And obviously she comes and finds them. You find out it's her husband, and lo and behold, after the celebration, she's waking up with some sheets around her. So we may have seen the inception of this new character of the movie. So that's kind of the big Easter egg that everyone's been talking about of this book. But I think it gets even deeper when, right after the next day, they're getting called to, not really battle, but like some, you know, do some meetings. And Han's saying, yeah, on the other side of the moon of Endor, there's a base, some rebels there. So not everything just, you know, hunky-dory like you would think happened right after Return of the Jedi. And now this is a four-part series for the comic book side. I'm not sure of what other material they're going to be releasing to set up the new movie, but right at the end, and this is where it just kind of gave me goosebumps, was they're in there, they're fighting. It was a quick battle within watching, you know, in the pages of this comic book, but what you really get is a sense of kind of almost a little bit of dread when first you're understanding Shara and her, like, her husband's in this place, and she's just like saying, you know, what's taking them so long? It took forever. And finally Han Solo goes, sorry, they had a lot of data in there, and the stuff that they have planned, it's not over. That, to me, I'm just like, yeah! You know, there's still an empire. There's going to be force pockets, and obviously we know that because of the new movie coming out, but this really gives me a first sense of there's going to be some battles, there's going to be shit going on. I can't wait for the new movie. This was an awesome comic book that really, it's more than all, and I love the Darth Vader series that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool one, just to get his, even though it's happening within the movies that we've already seen, this is the first, like I said, real new canon material that they're doing.
I might actually have to go back and pick this up for multiple reasons. One, like, I guess with all the Star Wars stuff coming out, I'm just like, I started picking up when it first came, and I was like, hey, and then I'm like, okay, overload, no more, none of it. And I had to put it down.
Yeah.
But this, like, I didn't even bother looking at who the creators were on this, and with Rucka and Chichetto on there, I mean, that was my favorite Punisher run, mm-hmm. were those two working together, so I'm like, fuck, now I gotta go pick this up, but.
Definitely, and like I said, there's gonna probably be more reveals in the next, because one a month up until when Star Wars comes out.
Yeah.
And then I was going on Wikipedia to check out
Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To check out some of the other, you know, things that they're doing to give more info, because I am one of those fanboys where I don't want to spoil it, but I do want to know. I want to know not necessarily what's going to happen in the movie, but like the history. And that's what is great, is that the movie probably will have some flashbacks of what has happened, but really if they can enrich the many years that fill in the gap of the movies, that's just more shit I need to read. So
speaking of kind of some stuff where, like, you know, you'll actually admit that you don't know everything about Star Wars and all that. Remember we were having that conversation about the color of the Star Wars or of the lightsabers, mm-hmm. and you're like not sure, like, well, maybe somebody else has had red that wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. I went and conferred with Jay from An Elegant Weapon, and
straight to the source.
Nope, it's only basically Sith have had a red blade. What he did say, though, is that this is the first time where someone who's not a Sith is going to have a red blade, because the bad dude, what the hell is his name?
Kylo Ren?
Yeah, Kylo Ren. He's technically not a Sith, but he's kind of a Sith groupie, a Sith wannabe. And like, Jay filled me in on some really cool shit, which I'm not going to go into detail here, because I didn't know anything about it, and so I think it's a really cool plot point to the character. But if it's available, if you guys want it, you can go out there and fucking find it yourself, because it was very available through Jay. It's kind of a little backstory on him.
Nice.
But, yeah.
He knows what's up.
Yeah. one other thing, Tony. Were you pretty much done? Okay. This one, I saw this a while back, and it was from a guy on Reddit by the name of Nameless88, and this is like, it's a couple years old, talks about how Ewoks are actually terrifying little savage creatures, that they aren't these cute, fuzzy little things. Basically because when they first capture Luke and everybody else, C-3PO translates to them that basically they're planning on eating them. Like, you remember this.
Yeah.
But then they see C-3PO, a.k.a. our Lord and Savior Goldenrod, and he gets them to let their friends go. So then at the meeting, at the end, when they've defeated, like, the Empire and all that, you see him playing, like, little bongos on stormtrooper helmets and a xylophone made out of chest plates. What the fuck do you think they're eating at this banquet? So did they in turn, like, unknowingly turn Luke and Leia and Han into cannibals, going, here, eat this, because...
Probably.
Yeah. So, just terrifying little savage bastards.
But... And so cute. That's the turn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, everybody's like, oh, Wicket. Nope. Little fucker eats people.
But they were so cute in the follow-up movies.
In the Ewoks movies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't eat Drew Barrymore.
Wait, what? Drew Barrymore was an Ewok movie?
Wasn't she? Yeah.
No. She was not in an Ewok movie.
Pretty sure.
I'm going to just call you wrong on that one right now. And if I'm wrong, then I'm still going to say you're wrong and edit out the part where you're right.
No, you won't, because you're too lazy to go back and edit it out.
I could be wrong. It's happened before.
Shall we move on to news?
Yes.
All right. There's kind of a lot of stuff that came out this week. One thing that I just kind of, to kind of kick this off, little congratulations to Dave Marshall. He has replaced Scott Alley as editor-in-chief at Dark Horse. Scott Alley is going to remain there. And I'm trying to remember what it was. Sorry, I'm fumbling through this. Oh, he's going to be executive senior editor there. So he's still, which that has to do with a lot of, like, you know, talent scouting and you know, developing new talent, things like that, which I guess he's fantastic at. So, but yeah, just quick congratulations to Dave on that. That's always a big deal when something like that goes.
Heck yeah.
Tony, what did you have out there for news this week?
I didn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, you didn't.
Minus the whole list of stuff that we discussed.
You didn't see the new leaked apocalypse image.
I did. I'm still not
calm down your fan rage.
Yeah, not 100% satisfied, but it's a lot better. It's
way better.
And yeah, that definitely, even from what we're talking about, like, it could be because, you know, they originally released, you know, the pics that weren't all the way rendered and stuff, and they still had stuff to do, or it's backlash. I think it's total backlash, fan backlash of, like, shit, we need a guy to go in, do some CGI, do some changing of some hues. He does look a lot better.
Now, here's my question. Is it that he looks a lot better, or is it like the unattractive chick that just knows how to take a really good selfie for her avatar on Facebook? Is it all in the angle?
And the lighting. And the filter.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's like,
Didn't think about that, but that's probably.
Yeah, it's just really good cropping. You
know? Really, this TV that they leaked the picture out of is just, it's adjusted. He's probably actually still purple.
Yeah. all right, there was, speaking of some Star Wars stuff, though, Tony, it's rumored that there's going to be, like, a teaser trailer at the end of Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Okay, for their next year's option. I can see that, but like, whenever I hear that as news, I kind of want to say, duh. Like, that's what people are doing now to make people stay in the seats to watch the damn credits, which I'm fine with that. I hate the movies that actually don't have something at the end now.
I hate it when there's a Marvel movie that doesn't.
Because you know that they
have. Fuck you, Marvel. You have to do one always now.
Right.
But yeah, I can totally see them having post credits and stuff, which isn't something normally Star Wars has done, though. But obviously, fuck, the last ones were made many, many years ago in a galaxy far away. So having them do that now, I mean, yeah, with the times.
Isn't the rumor that it's going to be from Rogue One?
Yeah,
the but next that's happens before. Rogue One is supposed to happen before this movie.
Is it? Timeline?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I did not know that.
Well, it doesn't have to be, you know, in sequence where these are.
Or it could be, let me tell you a story of one of the Rogue One squadron.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, but the thing is like, literally all it could be is, let's just say hypothetically Kylo Ren gets killed in this movie. Like Darth Maul got killed in Phantom Menace. Like, oh, he's dead now. Everybody's good. It could just be you see some different hand reach down and grab the lightsaber. It goes zoom and just turns on. There's your fucking teaser trailer. Mm-hmm. That's it. So somebody else went all you know fanboy on it, and now he's got the weapon. So
right.
Mary Jane Watson is about to join the cast of one of Tony's favorite characters, Iron Man.
Yes, and that's what Tony Stark needs, another
redhead.
Good-looking redhead.
Well, this was kind of it was kind of interesting. The article I saw came from comicbook.com, and what they were saying is that Brian Michael Bendis was saying that they're sitting there at one of their Marvel publishing retreats, and all these characters got brought up, and realized nobody had anything going on with Mary Jane. And he's like, dibs. So, not really sure, like, you know, what it's going to be, but, you know, I mean, I guess there's already some,
I kinda like
history
this,
with them.
I say I don't know the history, but I could like it in some story arcs where, I mean, Spider-Man, you know, Avengers and everything, but if this could get into some personal life of, like, him being pissed off at Tony, if Tony starts dating her.
Maybe they could start a civil war.
Yeah.
Mary Jane Watson, cause of the next Civil War.
Yep.
That seems legit.
It seems a hell of a lot more likely than anything else.
I have to say, though, for her character being one of the more iconic women characters in books, to see her kind of be saying, hey, we need to do something with her, we can't let her sit on the wayside, and B, even seeing her through the Spider-Man books come into her own as not just the girl that goes to the theater and then has to get saved, that she's doing her own thing. She owns her own nightclub, that she doesn't need Peter in her life anymore, or Spider-Man or anything like that. So, awesome.
Yeah. All right.
There's another book announced from Marvel with, which the big part of this is it's going to be their first Native American superhero, Red Wolf.
Well, it's...
No, but it's a new ongoing series. The first one that they ever had, which came back out in this early mid-70s was when they first published him. He was more of a mythological, take some more of the, you know, Indian mythology type.
Heritage and all that. Yeah. Yeah, because he first showed up in Avengers number 80, which I think that was 1970, if memory serves, from what I read.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and yeah, he came made his appearance in the new 1872 book, A Battle World. So right now, taking this, and it made a lot of sense too, because the reading this, they were saying how really the southwest of the United States really doesn't have much going on for it as far as superheroes or villains or anything. Like, it's just L.A., you know, sometimes the Great Lakes Avengers from Michigan, but mainly New York, Miami.
Thank God we've got Squirrel Girl. Holy shit. I mean,
She's badass, man.
These nuts around here. Yeah.
So it is kind of cool. It'll be interesting who they have his bad guys be or what they do with that part of the U.S. So,
yeah. Couple other things that did pop up this week. Humble Bundle announced a little bundle that I know Lindsay's excited about.
Yes, the Neil Gaiman Rarities Bundle. It's stuff that's either been published and never republished, or stuff that's never been published by him. There's actually...
Okay, so it's not really his?
He's written it. It's just never been published. It's even got a cute little book of poems by his daughter.
Aww.
I know. There's
nepotism. Isn't that cute?
Right? Although, I did listen to an interview once with him, and he was talking about how he came up with the story for Coraline, and it was for his daughter because she came home from school one day, and she's like, kids' books suck. There's not enough darkness in them. So he wrote her Coraline.
Oh, wow.
So who knows? I mean, she could have a little... They could be, like, the darkest children's poems ever. But, nice. It's got 10 more days left on it. I think it's September 23rd. The average right now is $19.58 to unlock everything. And there's so much stuff on here. So you guys should check it out.
Awesome. Speaking of Great Lakes Avengers, here in the Great Lakes State at Michigan State University, apparently there's the largest comic book collection of any library in the entire world.
Yes.
I mean, this is basically in our backyard.
I know. How did we not know about this until now?
Because we drink too much.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's like, hey, we could go to that. That's an hour away. That's a really long Uber ride.
Yeah, it is. The part about this that I thought was kind of adorable was you can go and you can read these in their specialty reading room, which is in their basement, and it only has 18 chairs, which, you know, kind of makes you think back to when you were reading comic books in your parents' basement.
Yeah, like yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, even though it has the largest collection, like, does it have, like, those rarities, those ones that you can't sell for millions? Like,
I don't think it's necessarily going to have some of those, but, like, what it talked about is just... It's got some stuff that you're not really going to be able to find in other places. I mean, it's got, like, you know, the Adventures of Tintin comics, that, like, the actual physical copies that are hard to find. They've got stuff from all over the world, from, you know, France, mm-hmm. And Belgium, and there's a couple other different places that they mentioned in this article. But it's just kind of cool to see, you know, what's there. And I guess almost, like, the whole thing, like, over 90% of this collection has actually been donated.
Right, and it's 250,000 individual comics, at least.
Yeah, so that's pretty awesome, you know, that, and I think what makes me happier is the fact that this is a collection in a library that, you know, there's two things that comics, I don't think, ever get credit for. One is being a true literary work, and two is being art.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have it, When you get, you know, in a gallery to have the artwork shown there, that's great validation. But to have a library own it as part of a literary collection,
right,
that is also validation. That I think, you know, comics is a media that is unlike anything else. And I just love what it does. And so I love seeing that this is there. But I guess, like, people from all around the world come to this.
Right.
This
we should
library.
Take a road trip, you guys.
We should. Who's going to be the DD? Not it.
Not it. Oh, Tony.
Nope, not it. And the fuckers who aren't here.
Yeah. All right. So maybe we can get Derek to borrow his mom's van. We can all watch DVDs in the back, and he'll be upset because that's normally where he gets to sit and watch the DVDs.
Well, let's take out his booster seat. Yeah. He's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, just move the sippy cups out of the cup holders. All right. There was one other thing that I saw. Actually, two things that came out now that I'm thinking about it. One, Tony, did you see the microbrewery that basically recreated Ecto Cooler in the form of beer?
Yes, and I want that.
You can't have
it. You can't have it. It's gone.
I know, but I want that. Like that.
But you know you can't have it.
Yeah. I'm hoping.
I want $1 million, too. I don't really see that fucking happening either.
Yeah. So this is pretty damn cool, though, that, you know, the stuff that they used to get that whole...
To be honest, actually, I know a lot of people that brew beer, start setting them to
task. There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, they just used different fruits and wheats and stuff like that, and they had it, and it sold like wildfire, and there it goes.
It's gone. It's gone. What, Tired Hands Brewing Company?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's in Pennsylvania. So that's not too far.
We should go there.
We should totally convince them to make us some special.
We just need a DD. Not it.
Not it.
Right. Really, really hate the title of this, but All New, All Different Marvel .1 is going to be coming out right at the end of this whole Secret Wars event. And I hate it just because I hate it saying All New, All Different, because if that's going to be the tagline they stick with for a while... After a couple months, it's not going to be all new or all different. It's just going to be the same.
They're doing points again, too.
Yes.
I hate that shit.
But this, I do normally.
I hope there's some number ones, though.
Except for this is going to be the first of the many new stories and everything coming out of Battleworld. So this one in particular will really kind of get people set in. And for whatever reason, Marvel likes 8 months. This is going to take 8 months in advance so that they can kind of just throw these stories in there without having to reveal right away the big, many changes that have happened. Now, whether this is how they're going to do with all the books as well, so that they can always do those flashback scenes in comic books. This is going to have the all-new, all-different Daredevil, a Carnage, an all-new Inhumans, Rocket Raccoon and Groot, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Contest of Champions. Contest Champions, which I've also been looking at, seems like it might be the next big kind of pseudo-event. And all I know is that's going to have Maestro, who I think him and Maker are probably the two coolest bad guys that are becoming to the new 616, whatever they're going to call it, universe. So, I don't know. It's probably the only point one that I'm actually looking forward to, so
hopefully
that's why I'm sharing it.
Point one.
I know. I bet you they'll make some other point ones just for you, Linz, because they heard how much you love them.
Well, she can count to point one.
No, she can't. That's why she doesn't like it. She doesn't know where the point one fits in. All right. So, have you guys heard about Gwenpool?
Yes.
In passing.
Mainly because I like Deadpool.
Deadpool. And, yeah, so... So apparently Gwenpool is...
Well, it was mainly just a variant cover
right.
For when they did the whole Gwen Stacy on all the covers thing.
Right. Yeah, but see, now she's going to be starring in the first chapter of a three-part backup story in the new Howard the Duck series, and she's going to get a Gwenpool special one-shot.
Well, that's, Christmas.
To be
Christmas
honest, story. Right after that cover came out, I didn't hear about the cover at all at first till I started seeing it showing up on my news blogs. And then there was someone at, I forget which convention.
But cosplay all over the place.
And I'm like, that seems kind of cool, but I don't... Is it going to be Gwen Stacy that became Deadpool? Or are you just calling it Gwenpool because it was a mashup between the two? Like, it looks kind of cute in the way of like how Gwen has a pretty fucking awesome Spider-Man suit. But with the whole white and pink and everything, interesting, you know, to say the least. But as she has part of her face showing, she doesn't look like ugly Deadpoolish. So is she going to be Deadpool?
Well,
like,
see, here's
so much to leave in the mind to imagine.
Here's my thinking of what they could do to retcon Gwen Stacy, even in the 616, is, oh, she was dead, but you know what? Kind of like Wade Wilson had really bad cancer. Somebody went and yanked her out and then put her through the Weapon X program, took her dead body out.
That could be sweet.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I've heard, though, is that she's not coming over to the 616, though.
Is she in
Because they've created so many of her characters and her stories that her book's been going, I've heard that's going to be... She obviously knows because she's gone doing some dimensional time streaming, right, too. But that she's going to be her... That's going to be a separate world. Because to put everyone in the 616 really would fuck up with a lot of story arcs. Now, it'd be interesting to have her interact, which I could see it, but her whole having Peter Parker dead and that whole aspect of her persona, her, you know, dad being police chief chasing after, wouldn't really work in the 616. So I believe that's where they're going to still be doing it. So who knows? Maybe they could have Gwenpool in the 616, and that would be a good theory.
Yeah.
I think it would be fun for her to be in the Spider-Gwen because, you know, Spider-Man and Deadpool always have this really funny... interesting dynamic. So if you could bring that into the
I'm thinking
into the Spider-Gwen comics.
Terrible things.
Oh no. But you know, Gwen Stacy, she's the new Harley Quinn. She's everywhere. So
yeah. No, Deadpool is the Harley Quinn.
Deadpool's or actually
Harley
back.
Quinn is the Deadpool.
Harley Quinn is the Deadpool.
Yeah.
Because Deadpool is technically dead with everyone else.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that wrap it up for news for everybody.
Yeah,
I got nothing else.
Cool. I am going to move on down to Indie Turnpike, and I've got a book called Terra Quill, which is the collected 10 short stories from Sean Daly. Sean, I had the pleasure of I met him in person last year briefly at Fan Expo Canada in Toronto, and last weekend when I was there, I got to talk to him again, and he had his book put out. Sean is just an amazing guy all around. One of the things that blows me away is that, unlike most people that are in comics, they've been drawing their whole life, Sean a few years ago said, I want to draw. So he just started drawing, and he's fucking ridiculously good at it. Like
that's all it takes. I just want to say I want to draw.
There you go, Tony.
I think he has a mutant power. Okay. Because there's no other explanation for this. I got a really cool commission from him. You know, for Mel, he did a great Hawkeye. I picked up actually a MODOK that he did, like a watercolor MODOK that I'll have to show you guys, which is just fucking badass. But Terraquil is. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. And the basic idea behind this is that Terraquil is a world that has just kind of been lost. But there were people there that were kind of like us. And these are 10 tales of the people that lived in this world. Sean's even gone so far as to make himself a little map of Terraquil, kind of like a Tolkien style map.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, so you can kind of see how the world is laid out, where different parts are. What's really impressive about this book, now this went through a Kickstarter and all that.
Okay.
But you can, if you want, go to Sean, and it's Sean, S-H-A-W-N, Daly, D-A-L-E-Y, SeanDaly.ca, because he's Canadian, eh? and Sean actually has the reputation of being the most polite Canadian that there is.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He argues with you when you try to buy something from him. He's like, no, just take it. No, you take the money. No, I'm good. No, just take the fucking money. Like, you know, so he doesn't do this always. So when people go up to him at the next show and go, give me my free shit.
He'd be like, I heard on Drunken Comics you don't charge.
Yeah. No, just give him money because, like, it's insane. He's always trying to give stuff away to people. Not everybody. If he doesn't give it away to you, it's probably because he doesn't like you.
But he won't say it because he's too polite.
He is. But yeah, so these 10 different stories, they're kind of like fables. They're good life lessons.
okay,
if you will, kind of the be nice to people. So like growing up, you, like when you're younger, you don't know everything. All these different things about life and death, and you know how people helping each other. There's one really, really cute story called Muh, M-U-H, and it's the story of this giant that's walking along, eating an apple, and the apple is like the size of like a marble in his hand, and he drops it, and there's a little baby giraffe that is like, Muh? And so they just go, Muh, 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 back and forth to each other, which is where it comes from. And so he then kind of keeps the little baby giraffe around.
You know what I've been picturing, though?
What?
Remember that commercial? It was with the guy with the giant golden house and the little baby giraffe.
No.
What? And then what, oh, little baby giraffe?
Yeah, the little giraffe on the pillow.
Yeah, and it's like him just being all, like, that's kind of seeing that picture. Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, I want a little baby giraffe.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, he carries the little giraffe in his backpack for a while, and, you know, he helps the giraffe get the apples. But then as the giraffe grows, the giant gets older and starts to shrink in size as well, and then the giraffe ends up helping him get the apples later on in life.
Aww.
These are the kind of stories, and this is, you know, one of the few that doesn't have words, which is why I could explain it quicker. But this is just a great, great book. I think my favorite one, there were two actually that were probably my favorite. One was Jimmy's Eatin' Well, and it's just the cutest fucking story. Like, that one I just loved. And Sapped. And Sapped is the story about this little cactus monster who is, again, just really fucking adorable. Like, you know, I like the little cactus monster.
Aw, so, yes. That's cute.
Yeah. And his name is Rudel.
Oh.
And because Sean put a bunch of stuff in the back, which is cool. So, like, for people that like to see the behind-the-scenes stuff, there's a ton of that in there. And originally, this little Rudel's name was going to be Sutcac, which is just cactus spelled backwards.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, eh, it's a little backwards. So, but you guys should pick this up. And for people, like, if you don't necessarily believe me, there's two people that really did believe a lot in him. One is Ryan Stegman, the other is Jeff Lemire. Oh. And they both have given him, you know, a lot of encouragement to do this. And you can tell Sean has a lot of Jeff Lemire influence.
It's true. The art is reminiscent.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's, you know, it's all pencils and watercolor. It's black and white. But it's just, it's stunning. His layouts are fantastic. I was showing this to another friend who's in the industry, very well known, but will remain nameless since I didn't check with him to see if it's okay to go, hey, do you
care? To name drop him?
Yeah, to endorse this. And I showed him this, and I was telling him how Sean basically only a few years ago said, I want to learn how to draw. And he goes, for somebody that a few years ago basically wasn't drawing, he goes, not only does he know how to draw, his layouts for a comic book, he goes, he's doing things better than most people that have been doing this for a lifetime have. So you guys want to find something cool that is completely 100% self-published, you have to go to SeanDaly.ca and check it out, and send him some money, because this is, it's a great story. I'm actually going to go buy another copy of this, because I want to have a copy to share with people that,
oh, nice,
you know, that are on the fence. So, because I think this is one of those books, if I share it, you're going to feel guilty enough to buy your own copy.
Right.
So, Linz, here you go. I'm going to start with you.
Oh, yay!
So, yeah, that's it for Indie Turnpike.
All right, did we officially decide Booze in a Book?
I think...
Because we talked about it, and then...
We did. We had a couple choices. Did we decide on one?
Fuck, we can do two if we want. When's the last time that we went, no, I only want one drink?
Well, the one I proposed, tied along with Tony's review, the Star Wars, what was it, Shattered Empire?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are lightsaber shots.
Yes.
And so they're shots done in, like, test tubes so that they look like lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's blue, green, and red. And they are called Sith Master, Jedi Master, and Jedi Apprentice. And you can tell the types of alcohol are in these fit with the level that you're at. Because Sith Master has Everclear in it. So it's triple sec, Everclear, and pomegranate juice. Jedi Master, Triple Sec, Gin, and Sour Apple Schnapps. And then you have the Jedi Apprentice, which is Triple Sec and Rum and Blue Raspberry Mix.
The Blue Raspberry Mix, I was like, I'm like, that's bullshit. Like, why wouldn't you just use Blue Curacao?
Blue Caraco?
Yeah.
I forget who the other day we were talking about drinks, some of my other buddies who aren't into comics, but someone had said that, and I started just giggling so hard because I was thinking about this, and what? I go, it's Curacao. Don't you know that?
But these all sound super tasty, and we should do some of these sometime, you guys.
Like now.
Yeah, let's do it. All
right.
I know Tony has all of this booze in his house somewhere.
Yeah. The other one that, this one I haven't tried yet, but I guess this is a pretty damn smooth drink, and I'm curious about this one. This one just worked color-wise. It seemed to match with the comic, general mood-wise, and then obviously with the name. What this one is it's Kahlua let me get the actual. It's 2 ounces or 1 ounce of Kahlua, 2 ounces of dark rum, and 1 ounce of lemon juice. And I'm just like, ugh. I'm like, interesting. And just like that, it'll make you quake because it's called the Moonquake, and I'm going to pair that with Quake number one from Marvel Comics.
Well done, sir.
Yeah, a little on the nose, but that's all right. So, and actually, that's one that I'm just really kind of.
It sounds like it. You got to drink it fast because it's going to get all chunky.
It's not going to. How's it going to get chunky?
It just sounds like it's going to get chunky. You put lemon juice in anything, and ugh.
There's no cream based.
Ugh. Yeah, how does lemon?
Ugh.
Yeah, you put lemon juice in iced tea, it gets all chunky.
Gross.
Yeah, you put lemon juice in with some sugar and water, and make lemonade. It gets all chunky.
Put a little lemon juice to zest up my chicken on the grill. It gets all chunky.
Yeah, that's chicken chunkets. Yeah, I don't understand how non dairy based things are going to get chunky with lemon juice.
It's science. She obviously.
I'm thinking on a whole nother level.
She knows. It's a really smart drink.
I hate you guys so much.
Lindsay, do you have anything for last call?
I had a couple things. I picked up Wicked and the Divine, number 14.
You sure it's number 14?
Yes.
Did you get that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Issue 14. I can read 14, maybe not count to 14. And then Deadly Class, number 16. I also picked up The Bunker, number 14. I haven't read this yet, though.
I think I'm like four issues behind on The Bunker now. Like, I have to keep buying it because it's so damn good.
It is.
And
it
I
is
just
really
need
good.
To sit down and, like, binge read.
You do, because the last couple ones were really good. But I do want to say one thing, The Wicked and the Divine. If you guys are reading this.
I quit reading
you
that
should,
a little while back.
You should go back one issue and pick up 13 and then start reading it again.
Really?
Because it's getting really good. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Deadly Class, did you see the drunk Wolverine that Wes Craig?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did in the sketchbook. That was fun.
Yeah.
He also did Now My Girlfriend Owns, as far as we know, the only Kate Bishop Wes Craig has ever drawn.
Nice.
Yeah. It's badass.
Right on.
So, I had a couple other ones as well. Walking Dead number 146. I got really excited a while back, and now like this is always a roller coaster for me, where I'm like, oh my god, it's the best book ever, and I'm like,
maybe I'll start waiting until the trades again.
Yeah, I don't know, I'll read it. Oh, that's a little better. Oh my god, it's the best book ever. Why am I still reading this? And Tet number one.
Okay, I almost picked that up.
Really interesting.
Okay.
And I guess one of the one thing that I did want to bring to mention is that this and Drones are, as far as I know, the first two books that are coming out of the Comics Experience IDW partnership. And IDW, I've always liked IDW, but they do a lot more licensed stuff than they do creator owned, and this is one of the creator owned really interesting book. There's, I guess it's only going to be 4 issues, but yeah. So that, and then I have Sherlock Holmes versus Harry Houdini, the trade.
Hmm?
That this is from the same guys that do Kill Shakespeare.
Okay.
I picked this up last weekend in
Interesting.
Toronto. I haven't yet been able to read it. And then another book called Entropy, Volume 1, Tomorrow. And this is a book from Epicenter Comics, where these creators, I believe, if I remember correct, are from like Czechoslovakia, Eastern Europe someplace. And this is a book that I picked up there as well that's really beautiful, really cool, interesting storyline. I interviewed the publisher,
okay.
But we had some technical difficulties on his interview. So once I get around to reading it, I'll fill you guys in.
Sweet.
So.
Tony?
1602, Witch Hunter Angela. Also in the Marvel Universe, Civil War, number 4. That book's just so fucking... one of the best of this whole battle world. Also, picked up some trades to get caught back up on, and I'm so glad that I got back on the bandwagon. God is Dead, number 42. It really lost me for a while.
It lost me, too. I stopped picking it up.
It's now in this new... how it's... yeah, it's gotten to where I'm interested again.
Okay.
So
is that book still coming out every other week?
No.
I was say that was half the reason why I stopped getting it, because it was coming out every other week, and I wasn't like, oh.
It's slowed down a bit now. It's still more than like once a month. Like I think maybe every 3 weeks. So not every other week, but yeah, it. Like I said, it's worth it to start reading that again. I will take your advice on the whatever and divine, and you do
the whatever and the divine.
The making the divine.
No, whatever and the divine. Number one, whatever and the divine. It's all right. It's not quite as good. It's like whatever.
Yeah. So it's kind of all of the last ones that I had that you guys didn't mention. So.
Okay. Cool.
Did though officially. Watch the new Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, yes. And we were privy to that.
Yeah, our special little news feed that we have amongst ourselves that Tony was doing the equivalent of a live tweet.
It was pretty great.
It was like 4 in the morning, I think I started that movie. Oh, 3 in the morning. Got home from the bar. I was drunk.
Yeah, I'm getting up to... was I going to work? What day?
Probably, yeah, because it was a
Friday
morning.
Yeah, it was the middle of the week, yeah.
Yeah, and like I'm like... Tony posted blah, blah, and I'm like, what did he post? And I'm like looking, like, it's like an hour ago when Tony last posted, and I'm like, it's 6 in the morning. What the fuck were you doing?
I read some of those, and they're from my recollection, they're point on of how shitty that movie was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something, though, I finally did finish Daredevil.
The series?
The series.
Oh, about time.
Yeah, yeah. I know I'm a bad nerd, but yeah, that last fight scene, without giving spoilers away,
it's been on enough that you can say it, because
I'm not going to say it.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't.
Now we're going to give you shit.
Well, no, but I mean, it's pretty obvious that Daredevil is going to fight the Kingpin at the end of the...
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That fight scene, I was telling Wins about it the other day when we ran into each other, that it's everything that I wanted it to be. Like, it's like a fight scene... fell off the pages of a comic book and onto the screen of my TV. It's
everything
that good.
In that show was, and I even liked how they made, you know, Kingpin seem a little more human, like less of a total asshole, and that the vulnerability that he had in throughout this series, like so much goodness in there. And then did you see, I think I might have told you, right at the end when they're going into the law office, there's a trash bag with red string. Did you see that little Easter egg? There's a shot from across the street, and Matt's walking on in, and it then focuses on this trash bag, and the red string is 2DDs for Daredevil, which is a really cool kind of
interesting.
Little...
yeah, I didn't see that. I'll have to go back and look. I was going to say... what was it? Was it there a trash can and like Spider-Man's costume in it? That would have been way cooler, you know. But all right, guys. Anything else?
No, that's it.
I got nothing.
All right. Well, keep reading your comics. We will be back next week to talk to you more about them. Then we'll see you.